Since this sheet is mostly about bashing Litvax, Kazushomo, just one of our like gags that go on. So I saw in Rabbi Tzal Naor over there has a book about some Chagall paintings. You know Chagall. I used to have his Marc Chagall was a painter.
He's an artist, no?
Yeah, artist. I used to have his picture of a Jew here. I told my wife this art doesn't work in my new design. We should throw it out. Anyways, and he was like a very, I don't know how you call it, like imaginative, very like, what's that book? It's the blue book. It says the Kabbalah of Relation.
Oh, this one.
You could look at one of his pictures that you see already, that his paintings, like, they're fantasy. They're not realistic. They're not based on anything in the world. They're based on things that are in imagination.
More abstract, I guess.
So, what?
More abstract?
Yeah, I don't know what it's called. Like, impressionistic, fantasy, something.
Oh, this is odd.
Yeah, they're very odd. They're like not. Some of them are really odd, and some of them are
very odd.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you understand what I'm talking about? Yeah, bring the book. So it says in this book, Rabbi Tzal quotes him saying that, and he was comparing himself to another painter that like more to the Zach with more structure, and he said, so I'm a chassid and he's a mesnagid. The painter is also a chassid and a litvax. This is a Chassidish painting, and that guy's a litvax. So from here we see that's very, very Chassidish and litvax is emotional for him.
Saying it.
Like a style. So he's using Chassidish and litvax painting styles.
Uh-huh.
Now, like this. Now we're going to learn a little bit about choice. We're going to try. We heard about that, talked about free choice and free will and stuff.
Yeah,
so we'll have to continue a little bit. I'll tell you why. And
no such thing as free will.
I didn't say there's such a thing. I said it's not important. The kind of there's a lot to talk about this, but let's talk a little bit. Let's clarify like one or two points, which would be more than enough. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we discussed. Now, why are we talking about free will entirely? No, sorry. Why are we talking about choice, not free will? Okay, why are we talking about choice to begin with? We're talking about it because choice is one of the things that makes what we are into something that we are responsible for. That is the really interesting paradox. I think, I don't know if we said it this way in the last class. I said it in Baruch Pak in this way. In other words, there's these two things, okay? We could talk about actions, right? Just like actions, things that a person does. That's one thing. Like litvax, right? Litvax only talk about actions, right? You read the... For example, I was reading... It's very interesting, because for example, I was reading the Rav Lotzato, Masil Sisharim. And here there's a version with a dialogue in the beginning, you know? Yeah, that... You know that?
Yeah,
that black book.
Yeah,
the Vikoach.
I don't think I've read the
Vikoach. Rav Lotzato was a Renaissance guy, and he was after the Renaissance. Yeah. But he, in their times, it was fashionable to write dialogues in the manner of Plato and so on, not only to write treatises. And many of his books he wrote in both of these ways, in dialogue form.
Have you ever heard this? I recently bought it in Judaica Plaza. It's called a dialogue, it's called Sichos al Abba.
Yeah, Abba Bana.
You have Yudav
Abba Bana. No.
I didn't even know he had a son.
Yeah,
it was a son. That's so weird. Like, yeah. I didn't get very far.
But he was a lot more. He's a Platonist, kind of a Platonist.
I found the beginning a bit tedious, so I didn't get too far.
Probably the translation is not so nice here, also. It's hard to translate this kind of
thing. English.
Well. Oh, there was an English?
I think there's a University of Toronto one.
They had a Hebrew one, I saw.
Yeah, I have the Hebrew one.
Oh.
It was done by Machon Bialik or something.
Yeah, so it was a thing to do this dialogue form. And dialogue form is useful at least because it shows you what someone is really up against sometimes. Like who is trying to argue. Sometimes you write an article and it's not clear who you're fighting with. So in a dialogue, you need to have like an opponent.
The best dialogue I saw was Chagall's.
Yeah, that's also
because it's not just setting up straw men to be knocked down. It's a full-throated, emotional...
Ramchal's, how do you call it, his like partners in the dialogue, interlocutors are not very advanced usually, they're usually not very good representatives of the other shitta. But in any case, I was noticing there, and we have to do more reading of that because it's related to all the subjects that we're talking about. But like his big thing in the beginning, he's up against something someone he calls a Talmudist, like a Nigla person, a Litvak. And he tells Litvak that he doesn't know there's knowledge, right? His like big thing, which is something we agree with very much, right? although we don't agree with the way Mishael Shem frames it. This is not a Mishael Shem bashing class either. We're not here to bash the Mishael Shem. I'm just trying to use him to illustrate a point. So what he's up against over there is very clearly someone who thinks that actions are enough. He's like, what do we have to do in life? Mm-hmm. Well, we have to do what the law says. And of course, you have to have kavana, but that's not like the major thing. The thing is actions. So it's an externalized version, or like we say sometimes, it's making people into machines, which are things that are judged by their products, not by what they are, but what they produce. You produce mitzvahs, mm-hmm. you're a good guy. You produce a virus, you're a bad guy. That's actions, right? Now, actions, for the most part, are their... That's the theory of actions. Now, contrary to that, there's this theory of something more internal, right? Something, we say, what you're on the inside, things like that. And now that theory is something that needs a lot of explanation, a lot of differentiation within it. What do we really mean by being something on the inside? What you are, not only what you do. But that's something very, I think, that's given to very... many simplifications and many like a lot of nonsense that people say and believe based on that, right? So as an example of clarifying that, we've gotten a lot of clarification on that point in our discussions of actions and character and midas, which is not something external. But and I think that there's both kind of mistakes. There's many kinds of mistakes in this. But to be very clear, we talk about. When we talk about midas, right, having good midas, we are not talking about some actions, right? Because the whole point, to make this point very sharp, the whole point of being a good person in Aristotle world, the Rambam world, is that it's a good person is someone who doesn't necessarily do something different than a bad person who is self-controlled, right? That's the important...
A good person...
An important difference, right? There's good people and there's bad people who have self-control.
This sounds very Tanya. I remember when I was
Tanya. Yes, I agree. And yeah. This is another thing. I think that the Tanya makes some of the mistakes that, are, yeah. at least from the Rambam's point of view, the Rambam and the Tanya agree very much that it's not enough to do the good things. And that, yeah. I think that that's why the Tanya, just to be very clear.
Yeah, because he says that in Russia could be someone, or right. a Benin, could be a Gummer in actions.
Exactly. I think that the Tanya brings this into very sharp relief with that statement. Although I think that what the Tanya calls a tzaddik, what he calls internal, is not the same thing as what we're calling internal.
The Rambam, the beginning of Parak Hey, says,
yes,
no, just like this. Why does he compare the two, though?
Yeah, because the Rambam, and we're going to get to Parak Hey and discuss it at some point in the next 20 years. Parak Hey is explicitly about this, but it's assumed.
But he says it goes hand in hand, Maisim and then Midas.
Oh, you mean Perikaya?
Yeah,
Perikaya and this. Oh, no, Chazdaya. I don't know. We're learning from it, but... No, why do you say it goes hand-in-hand in Perikaya?
It says just like you have to be good at Midas and Deus, right?
No, I know what you mean. No, I see what you mean. I don't think that's what it means, that word, that line. But let's stay here. We'll get to that. You mean the chacham? Chacham nivdol b'dayis. Yeah, I don't think. I think the second thing is also not also internal there. I'll explain. In other words, it's still midas. It's not mas. Of course, there's masim that go with the midas. But
really
what he's trying to say about dayis over there means opinions, not midas. Dayis over there doesn't mean midas anymore. It changes meaning.
Oh, really?
I think. Well, I'm left to read it inside. Wait, let me come back. In this sense, to be very clear, in this sense, the Tanya, and I think this is why the Tanya gets into this all, and the Tanya, as the good Litvak, ties himself into knots by trying to explain this and working it out with the Gemaras and so on. And I'm pretty sure that the Tanya's Gemara is the wrong one for this subject. It's not the Tzadik Gemara, of course, doesn't mean this ever. And maybe it means like that in the Ryan Hemman, the Zohar that he quotes, another thing that needs to be researched, needed. But the Tanya is trying very hard to establish this thing, and like Chassidus, in the same... in the very broad sense, right? In the very broad sense, Chassidus and Musar and Kabbalah and philosophy, they all agree with this statement that actions are not enough. They're not only they're enough, they're not the main thing. But how to spell this out, to spell out what it means, this internal thing, what does that consist of? That is something where people get very confused. And what I want to do today is to give some clarification of that based on the Rambam, based on Aristotle's understanding of this. I think that that's the thing. So
it seems to me that today that, like, it's a different motivation now, because today, like, people don't have this sense of hierarchy in which that would motivate your actions, you know, like, this is your responsibility, you go and do it. That people need inner motivation now.
Okay, know? So very good. So what people are looking for now is a different thing. It's really the thing, it's free will. It's not what we're talking about. Because, okay, wait, let's see if we can make this very clear without getting lost. So we're saying that it's agreed by... So, wait, I was starting to talk about the Mesillat Shlomo and I didn't finish my sentence. Right. So let's try to finish that sentence and then get to this one. Mesillat Shlomo, as an example, is very clearly against someone who will say that. But, he pretends that that person is a scholar. And his opponent, Lotzato's opponent, is like a scholar who reads philosophy and science and so on. But of course, that scholar is a very bad scholar because he didn't read the ethics. And Lotzato is like...
He's saying that about his... About his...
Well, he doesn't say this. I'm saying this. He's telling him how... His main point is how there is a wisdom. There is something to be studied in ethics. That's really Mr. Shum's point in his Akdama, in both versions. But here you see it clearer in the dialogue. And because according to the opinion of the people who are into action, everyone agrees that they need some level of kavana or some kind of internal, otherwise it's not you doing it and so on. But they think, oh, that's simple, because that's like basic. Mm-hmm. And then like his description is like the Hasidim, and the Mesillat Shlomo talks about Hasidim. The Hasidim, the super pious people, who are busy all day purifying their internality, like the Litzak looks on them and says, you're wasting your time. What are you even talking about by all your Musa Shmuz? You're just repeating simple stuff over and over. And Lotzato is trying to answer that charge.
Well, then you have the Nefesh HaChaim who says, it's good stuff, but it's not ma'akev, you know? It's not like...
Right, right. So I think that I don't know very well what Adam Silsa Shurim thinks precisely about this. I have a feeling that he's, at least from my standpoint, also somewhat confused. But I can't really show it right now. But what I think is that we need to distinguish a whole bunch of things in this internal levels of things. So let me. There's one thing that I already said many times.
Does Mesillat Shlomo put at the beginning action because it's like Zahiros, Zeris?
Yeah, yes, but we have to. I don't know I don't know how we understand it.
Yeah.
I also think that he misunderstands Zahiros. There's a lot of tadok. That we have to. I'm just using that as a way to talk about this thing. And I was saying that his opponent that is not really a philosopher. Like he pretends like, oh, we need Musar, you need whatever this story, Kabbalah, whatever it is exactly that he's putting in against that. It's not really true because the philosophers are the ones that invented this kind of internalism, and of course they don't. Aristotle at least doesn't understand it in the way that he understands. So that's, I think, there's a big difference here which we have to get to. For example, one thing that we've talked about many times, maybe we'll be able to make it clearer today, is that internal, we say middah, so what does it mean to have a middah versus to have to just do the action, right? Someone can do the action, not by having it, not by being, right? Someone can, for example, act in a courageous way, do a courageous act, without being courageous, without having courage. Mm. And what will he be doing it by? He will be doing it by... Well, by imitation, you could say. You've been doing it by some kind of spur-of-the-moment decision. Remember that a habit, a character, a trait is something that's not spur-of-the-moment, it's something settled. That has a more long-term existence in a person. Or you can do it by self-control, right? You can, like, say, I'm afraid. Well, it's not like the courageous person is not afraid, but we can get into that. But I don't really have this motivation, which courage is, but I'm just... I somehow have it, and okay, we can talk about that separately because self-control is very complicated. But those are the, that's why maybe when we're talking about now, maybe self-control isn't the best place to split, although it's also split there, but it's more complicated. So we could say people acting, we could say, let's say now, by imitation or by just like spur of the moment decisions, which doesn't mean that they're acting from that habit, from that character. It's not, he's not a courageous person. He did some courageous things in his life, or he did a courageous thing today. Maybe by doing that many times, we'll become courageous like that, but he's not courageous yet, right? So that's the important distinction in the Rambam between the internal and the external. He doesn't call it internal and external. He just calls it having the middle and not having the middle. This is very, it's very important.
So he discounts that completely?
No, he doesn't discount it completely. It's great. It's just not a good person, because the reason for this is obvious, right? Because, as he says, for example, nobody would call a good person someone who hates being good. Right?
This is a very Christian thing, because like Christians say, like, if you ask them, like, how could someone go to hell if they were a righteous person? And you say, well, they could be internally wicked, you know?
So wait, I think that this is a different interpretation of that, in some sense. Because, because I think that that's, I mean, what would it mean to be internally wicked although you're good? Like, I'm not sure.
What does that mean?
Maybe, I know
what... They always say that you have the potential to be wicked, even though, you know, that...
What does that mean?
That you're tainted by the original sin. Even if it looks like someone's righteous, they're not really righteous because they're tainted by original sin. Yeah.
Okay, so then this would be something based off the similar way of thinking. But again, the question is, what does this really require? What does it mean to be internally righteous, like to be really righteous, right? Now, like I said, firstly, all it means is to like it, right? Or to like have like a stable disposition to do it. Something like we say, like, he's that kind of person, not he's a person that did it. There's a difference between colored people and people of color. Like something like that. No. So that's the thing. But what one, so now I wanna, there's one thing that we already did many times, which is to explain that these internal parts of this, so it's having a middah, having a character trait, having a virtue, right? Having a virtue. Mm. And we call it a mala, which is an Arabic translation from Arabic. Having a virtue isn't equal to doing everything correct. It's something more than that. It's being that kind of person. But something very important to notice is that unlike an extreme internal version of this, that does not mean that the internal liking or the internal part of it is turned internally, right? So it's still about something, an action. Does this make sense? So, for example, we talked about the example which example do we talk about? Like a middle that Chassidim like talk about another, right? Humility. Humility, and it's mentioned here in the list of middles, humility. Humility for Aristotle and for the Rambam is a way of relating to other people. That means speaking to people in the appropriate, with the appropriate level of how do you call it? Being equal to them, or not putting yourself above them, not looking down at people in the appropriate amount, because to some extent you need to match your station in life. If you're, you know, a shminis, there's all these discussions. What is the appropriate level? But like every midah, it's just in the appropriate amount, right? It's not like to be a shmata to everyone. That's not the idea. But that's a different discussion. What I'm trying to get at is that another humility is a other regarding midah. It's about how you act. It's about how you act, right? It's not about how you feel internally. Of course, now, there is an internal part, but the internal part is not what I think of myself. It's how I like acting to other people. You get the difference? Like most people, when they talk about another, they think that it's internally focused middah. It's like what I think about myself when I sleep in my bed. Nobody cares. I mean, at least for middahs. Middahs are all other regarding. Besides for some, which is complicated, but in general, middahs are all other regarding. In other words, they're all about actions. They're about how you like. Now, part of the difference between someone who has internal anava and someone who just acts the part is that the person who just acts the part doesn't like it. Hurts them to some extent to be in an equal relationship with other people. It hurts them, or even below them.
But how do you like how do you like acting equal to people when you internally?
That's a question for you.
No, I'm saying, how's that?
Because you think that it's
you can't like it
because you enjoy because you enjoy being people's friends.
But you still internally think you're above everyone else.
No, what does that even mean?
What?
What does above everyone else mean? I think it's a question of what I think or what I like to do. Someone can think that he's greater than everyone else and still hate walking into the shul and sitting in the front. Just because he doesn't like that activity, doesn't like that action. Understand? What you self-regard, what you think of yourself, that's a different discussion. It might be a different discussion. You should probably think of yourself accurately to what you really are. That's a different discussion. But Anova is not really related to that, because we all agree, at least to some extent, right? Moshe Rabbeinu was Anov Moed B'chala Adam. It doesn't mean that he didn't realize that he was a great guy, like everyone asks. What it means is that he treated people with humility. He didn't, with respect, with, how do you call it? Opposite of like, itnasut, how do you say in English? I forget my words.
Status?
No, he related to people in a, well, I don't know, more. There's a question of how much. Like, of course, I don't think Moshe Rabbeinu went to the bar with you, but he acted towards people like Rashi says, shuffle of a savlan. He acted towards people in a way which is somewhat below what he really is.
Relatable. Right?
Yeah, so relate to people in a equal. Right, he saw eye to eye. He spoke to them eye to eye. He didn't. They're just people. Right, that's another. What I'm getting at here is that all midas are really external things in the sense that they're about other people. They're about how you act in the world. Mm-hmm. The internal part of them is just liking that. Like someone can enjoy, like someone who has the middle of humility is someone who enjoys being at the appropriate level of equality with other people in his social relations. He doesn't enjoy being above other people externally. And the person who doesn't have the middle does enjoys the opposite, right? Someone has a bad middle, the person who likes being on top of everyone, or who the person that is self-controlled likes being on top of everyone, but anyways overcomes it by to act nice in a nicer way. That's the middle. That's the number one distinction, and this is a very important distinction because I don't think you will find, at least for these middles, there are some middles that are, maybe you could talk about middles between the person and God, or between middle like we discussed this over here, I think already, that even a middle like precious temperance, which is what people would think is a middle about how you relate to yourself, like how you not to yourself, like to pleasure, is really about has a social function. So it's really about how you act. It's not really about how you feel. It's not about how much you like food. It's about you like eating in the appropriate amount and so on. But so it's at least an action, and even there's another level, but it's not our conversation now. What determines the correct amount of liking physical pleasures is what is conductive to society, and not what is. That's a different discussion. There's other levels of this, but that's the meaning over here. So that's one thing. That would be one important distinction. I don't know what the Tanya thinks. I don't know what the Moshe Shem thinks. All of these people, all these things are research needed. But what is important is that this internal version of internality is not a internally focused internality. It's still externally focused because what the Midah is the settled liking of the action. It's not something entirely disconnected from action. In other words, and what's the big difference is, that doesn't really make sense, it somewhat makes sense, but it doesn't make sense as much to say, you know, I'm really a good person, but I don't act well. I end up fighting with everyone, but I really love them. Because what do you mean, why do you fight with them if you like not fight? But you're saying I love them, you mean to say, you don't mean I love them in my heart, you mean I don't like fighting with them. And then you're just in a contradiction. Now that happens too, but then that's a real contradiction. It's different, right? You'll notice, now I can go back to talk about what we call about internal conflict, right? Not being self-controlled, or in Greek, akrasia, akrasia, not being self-controlled, or in the Rambam's language, the Rambam talk only has a self-controlled person, but the opposite of that, not self-controlled person, then we can understand something interesting here, that this does not mean, this is the important thing, it does not mean acting not in sync with what I feel internally when it's self-focused, right? Like, for example, let's talk about something like the correct amount of loving your friends, of being good to your friends, right? Which is the middah of friendship. Friendship is very important middah. right? Friendship. It's a mitzvah to be friendly to other people. Middah tova. Very important. Much neglected. The mitzvah of middah, friendship, well, the activities of friendship, you know what they are. You hang out with them, and you help them, and you do business with them, and different levels of that, and so on. But what is the internal thing? It's the being the kind of person who is a good friend, right? So we could say he likes. There's more to like than to liking. There's more to it than liking, as we'll get to today or next time. But at least liking. Now, sometimes people say, I love my friends, but somehow, every time I get together, we end up fighting. So I end up being a worse friend, right? I'm not so. Some people talk about this as like the conflict, right? The Tanya's conflict. By the way, the Tanya doesn't talk about other human beings at all. That's one big difference in Tanya and every other Musa book and so on. They're just focused on internal. The Tanya is only focused on between you and God. He's never focused on human beings. So it's a different discussion. But the Tanya's version of this is, I think, also similar to this. In some sense, because the Tanya says things like this, I love God internally, but I end up fighting with him all the time. Well, what does that mean? It's not the same, at least it doesn't, you see that by him, the internal thing, it means something different than what it means here. What it means here is to say that I have someone that would say, well, I love my friends. In other words, when I'm self-regarding, right, when I'm thinking to myself, I say, well, I like them, but then I'm not a friend to them. So you don't have the middah of friendship, you might have some other middah, I don't know, or some other, something else. But the middah of friendship is not something you have. Because the middah of friendship is the, like, the being a good friend stably, the tend somehow automatically, we could say, not a good word, but like being the kind of person who is a good friend. And I'm not like having to look up your friendship book, like how to be friends. How's it called, the book? How to get friends.
How to win friends.
You don't have to look up that book every time you go out with your friends because you're already that kind of person, right? That's what having the virtue of friendship is. And now, we could see that the conflict people often talk about is very similar to that weird person that would like, I like my friends, but I'm not a friend to them. That's not a conflict between the internal and the external. In the Rambam sense, that's a conflict between some fantasy you have or some other thing. We could find a word for it and what you really are. It's a different level of conflict. Does that make sense? Clear? If there is a conflict, then now there is conflict like that. There are conflicts. There are people who would say, like, in some sense, I am a good friend, but I don't. Mad. Sometimes I like someone say, well, I'm a good friend, but sometimes like, I get mad easily, and then I don't act like a good friend. That would be a better example of someone having the real conflict, in which then you need self-control. Before that, you don't even need self-control, you need something else. You need to learn what the middah is at all, or to start having it in some sense.
Saying he could be good at the middah, but some outside other middah is conflicting with that middah.
Something like you forget, something like, well, of course part of the middah is not to get mad at it, your friend. It's like another thing. You could call it that way, but it just works. Like a good friend is not someone who gets mad at his friend all the time. In some sense, maybe. At least not too much. So you could say something like, well, yeah, like my anger problems are getting in the way of my friendship, so I'm now you have, I am a friend, but I'm somehow not, it's not coming, it's not being actualized correctly. Now you have a problem. It's a different level problem. You understand the difference between these two versions of internality. Like, there's someone who just thinks that he likes his friends because when he thinks by himself that he likes them, but he doesn't actually have any virtual, any internal virtue of friendship. That person for sure goes to hell, you understand? Because it's not like you have a bad, you get what I'm saying? You're really a bad person who fantasizes himself a good person. Like, this is actually something that happens. People, like, fantasize themselves better people because their fantasies are not about other people, are not about living in the world, are not about acting in the world, right? My fantasy is that I'm a big lamdan because, not a lamdan, like a masmid, right? Because something like I would have wanted to be the kind of guy that learns a lot or something like that. But I don't. That's not what you could. You can't come and say, "Well, I'm internally a lamdan. I'm just having like some external hindrance, something that's blocking me to actualize it." That's not what's going on. Because someone that, like that, that's someone like who loves to actually learn, but sometimes he gets angry, sometimes he gets distracted. Then we can talk about that. But you're not someone that loves to learn. You love the idea of being that person. That's another level. Right? Or my example of friendship would be even clearer. You understand what I'm saying? So this is important. So that's one important clarification. It's true that these middahs are internal.
Is there a lower level than that?
There's lower levels than everything. You can always go lower. Never be misyayish. It's always worse. It could always be worse. And you cannot even have the fantasy.
Right, I mean, that's obviously. What I'm saying. Yeah.
Yeah, it's very nice. But like what I'm getting at is this thing like people like to say, like every year there's a good will. I don't think that's true in this sense.
Every's a big tzaddik.
Every is a big tzaddik because he has a good rutzen, right? He wants to be good. That's very cute. Like you want to, like if it doesn't hurt me and if it wouldn't have any cost. And even then, not everyone. But and if it doesn't mean anything, that's important. It doesn't really mean anything, that fantasy. It's like a very far and fuzzy fantasy. That's not the same thing as being the kind of person the Rambam would say. When the Rambam says, you see, this is the funny thing, when the Rambam says the internal is important, right? This he's focused on that, he's not talking about that. That's the important thing. I know the Rambam is scarish and that all see this is sort of misused, but that's not a discussion for today. But the point is that would not count as an internal midah for the Rambam's purposes at all. It would count as something separate from that.
Because here the difference between like internal and is like the external will put you in good standing with society. You won't go to jail. You won't.
Mm-hmm.
But the internal will is a spiritual quality. You're freed from certain things that drive you crazy, that don't allow you to have. That don't allow for a certain amount of spiritual clarity. You know?
Right, but that's whatever you call spirit. That would be related to a whole different goal, like what you're calling spiritual clarity.
Yeah.
We're not up to that goal.
If you're bothered by an ego, that will take up a lot of bandwidth. You know, will take up a lot of.
Right, but why is it a problem? What is this spiritual clarity that you're looking for? What is that for? All right, I think it's a real thing, but it's a whole different level of discussion. So that's one thing. That's one important distinction here. I wanted to say something. I forgot. Oh, now there are other. Just to answer you more clearly, the. What we're talking about here is that even right, just the one I'm going to get, even the internal part we're talking about is still not for yourself. The Rambam would say this clearly in Meir in the last chapter, Perek Nundal to
the
Gimel,
that midas are
yes, yes. Yeah. So we could say something, for example, like the extreme, like the clear version of something, would be something like this: someone who is I don't know how you call the correct midah with regard to others' money, right? Something like the opposite of a thief, right? Or someone, I don't remember what it's called, something like right. A honest person. This is complicated. A just person, a trustworthy person, right? Now, is like the Shelo Lishma version, or the external version of that, which is like he doesn't like it, right? He's just afraid of going to jail, right? Mm-hmm. That would be someone who does everything correctly, like we call in Svar Mira Sa'inish, does everything correctly. He's trustworthy as long as the police is looking.
Yeah,
but. Since many situations the police are not looking, or it's hard, it's Tuvara Masalalev, right? Right? When there's something that, and social circumstances have many such circumstances. Mm-hmm. It's not really true that society can only care about the level of Yiras HaOnesh. Because we do need, for social purposes, we also need good people who have, like, what we call a moral backbone, right? They have to be really good, and that means he likes being trustworthy for its own sake, right? He thinks that it's good for him. He's the trustworthy person. Not he's an untrustworthy person who is acts within the bounds of society. He doesn't want to go to jail and so on. He's a really good person, and that's the kind of internality that is needed for social to work. Right? We don't really want a world where everyone is only acting out of external fears or things like that. We do need, even for social reasons, or the same thing for. All midas, I think, at least because the law is not the only external thing that forces people, right? Honor, and you're going to be embarrassed, and other things. But it still doesn't cover enough. There's many human situations in which what stands between a bad society and a good society, like, you know, people talk about high trust societies. I forgot the sociologist invented that term. I forgot who. In the 70s, like recent. There's a concept of high trust society and versus a low trust society. And the high trust societies and some of it's not like it's disconnected from the enforcement of laws and so on, but it's also really an educational thing. At least that's what Aristotle and Plato and all these people would say. It means that people are educated to act mostly in trustworthy ways.
I saw a study once where they say the high trustworthy societies are like the most, the biggest ancient.
Because
you've never seen crime. You never see crime in
certain
those societies
kinds of crime.
Because you're constantly afraid of your life.
Certain
if
kinds
you
of
steal,
afraid
you
your
die.
Life. More like if you have to kill someone, you're probably already past the level of having a high trust society. But so things like people say things like this. Things like in the United States, if you lie, I don't know what extent it works anymore. But it used to be like this thing that in America, like the taxes mostly run on the honor system. Like the IRS believes you when you tell them how much money you make,
mm-hmm.
and they expect you to say the truth. Like maybe they don't, but that's the American ideal is something like this, that they expect you to say the truth, and because they expect you to say the truth, if they catch you lying, they can be really really mad at you.
Mm-hmm.
Like in a different system. The European system, for the most part, if you go to Israel, you'll see they don't expect you to say the truth, and therefore they don't believe you for what you don't can't write anything on your tax return without a receipt, without like the state already knowing about it beforehand, because they're assuming that everyone is lying, and therefore when someone is caught with a lie, it's like, okay, we'll put you in jail for a month, whatever, move on. You understand? That's something like what you're describing. But in any case, for my purpose, the important thing would be that. A high trust society, which is a useful society to live in, even begashmis, like it's not only like berachne, it's only ilm haba. For ilm hazeh, it's also pretty useful. It cannot work only by people acting that way. People have to; it has to create a certain kind of human being. So we need schools and education. Of course, culture educates. The TV educates you, and so on, right? Because there's the variety. I think this is one of the reasons, at least, because the variety of human situations is so varied. That you can't rely on, like, there's a form for everything. There's never going to be a form for everything. Therefore, if you rely on forms, there are always going to be people that find the loopholes. If you rely on people to have their judgment and to be more or less honest, decent people, you will end up with a lot more stable society, something that's a lot more reliable. In that way, this internal thing that we're looking for, this is why we don't call a person, like, for example, right, last week I talked about murder, right? Nobody would call someone, like, even the people that are all about, like, from Tzara Agra, and the bigger Tzara you have, the more of a Shem you have, none of them would be friends with someone who goes around saying, you know, really, I would be a murderer. I would kill everyone that cuts me off in traffic. Just, like, I'm scared because I'm not even I'm scared. I recognize we can do even a more internal version of that, right? I recognize that it would be bad for me, therefore I overcome my urges to murder everyone. Don't be that guy's friend, mm-hmm. right? He's a bad guy. What do you mean he's a bad guy? Yeah, he's a tzaddik, he should get the most tzar of everyone. Well, no. He's a bad guy because he's sick. A normal person, a good person, which means just a person that was well-educated. It's not like this is natural. This is something that we've worked on since Hashem came in Harsina and said, we're working on getting people to not want to kill people. Because it's not enough to get people to recognize that they shouldn't kill people or to kill everyone that kills other people and have them be scared of killing people. We need people to not want to kill people because that's the only way that we get less murder. In the long run, and that is why we say that it's not enough to be externally good and internally good. This is like contrary to what you get, like that's what you're saying. The other versions are different, like contrary to what you get in Chassidus and the more extremely internalist versions of ethics, where it seems that internalist ethics are antisocial. These are internalist ethics for the purpose of being social. Because what they're about is still the social activity. They're not about, when I say I don't want to murder, what I don't mean I have a pure soul. Maybe it's true that it's a pure soul. That's a different discussion. That would be caring about a different criteria. But I don't care about, like, well, my soul is pure. It doesn't want to murder anyone. And we could do this interpretation, but that would be a whole different class. What I care about is something like, this guy is, you can pretty much rely on him to not murder anyone. Unless it would be very important. Okay.
For the existentialists, you know, the internal.
Okay, we're going to talk about the existentialists.
Society, no? That
right, very good. We're going to talk about the existentialists now in a sec. Did we talk about that yet? Now, this is one thing. Another thing, which we have to distinguish, is another reason, and that's a more tricky reason. Now, a more tricky thing is to distinguish another reason, like that you were starting to mention, about why people value the internal or something to do with will, volition, wanting, choosing, things like that. And that has to do with an interesting thought, which I don't know how much I can clarify it now. But people would say something, and this is like existentialists say, or some chassidim say, Tkatzke chassidim say, that something, right, we all agree to the basic assumption. The question is how it plays out. We all agree that something that is not about what come, well, that's something. We all agree that an action or a habit that doesn't come from you doesn't count as a good human thing, right? This is really why we get into this whole discussion of will and choice and all of that, right? That's the first assumption that agreed on in the most simple level by everyone, right? If someone, let's say, was born is not entirely the correct thing, contrary to
that. Give an example once of being forced to do something.
If we're forced, that's for sure. That right. would be in one extreme example. Or if I could, or if it's something entirely natural. Let's say, I'm not sure about this, let's say if something is entirely natural, like something like someone who's beautiful, right? Someone who's just physically beautiful doesn't get a lot of moral credit for that. It's not a moral thing at all, right? If you can praise him, but you will just be praising God for creating beautiful people. You will be praising the person as a person. So this is agreed on. We agree that we need some ingredient, something in the vicinity of choice and will and so on, that makes what I am and what I do mine. What it makes it me as a human being. It makes me responsible for it. Otherwise, it doesn't have a moral value. It just might be good. I'm not saying it's bad. It's bad. Let's say it's not good to be beautiful and tall and all those nice things. But it's not good in the human sense, not good in the virtuous, in the human virtue sense. It's good in a different sense. Now, there's really a question. There's really a question of what the human being is. What makes me most? And here you'll see two almost contrary opinions. Not a contrary opinions, one opinion and one correct knowledge. One is... the thought that we discussed, for example, last time from Aristotle is that something is more about you, it belongs more to you, and this may be the question of it, this is what I said, that there's some kind of paradox here, right? Because we say that something that you do because you have that virtue, because you have that middah, is more about you than something you do because you chose it in the moment, or because we don't even call that choice, something like spur of the moment. Right. So, for example, if someone acts in a courage is a complicated thing because it has all these like emergency situations, which is something that makes it hard to think about. Something like someone who has the harikol nedivut, being a person that gives, right?
Generous, right?
Liberality, generosity, things like that. Someone who's correctly generous, we would understand that he is, if we're looking, right, you could be generous in all these ways. You could, like, be generous out of forcing yourself to give. You could be generous because, I don't know, I was in the mood, something like that. I gave you $1 million, for no reason. And most the rest of tomorrow I don't, and you could be too generous also, but that's a different discussion. We say... that the person who is stably generous, in other words, he is a generous person, is not only like doing generous things, that is more about him than the one who chooses it. And this is where there's like somewhat of a paradox, because we understand that, like the question, the paradox here is the question that people often ask, we discussed here, that if the goal of life is be a good person, good people, we say sometimes, do the good things automatically, right? The Ram's language is from these virtues follow good actions. They follow in like almost a necessary sense, not really necessary because it's a human being, not like a table. But it follows, it somehow comes out of that automatically. It's not something you have, there's no step in between that's important. There's no step in between having the virtue and the action. So like they have to choose it afterwards. Then people ask, okay, so then it turns out that those actions are less of you because they become automatic, so to speak. Right? Now, the true thought or the opposite thought, which is Aristotle's thought, which is Rambam's thought, is that it's not true. Why? Because what they are looking for is not something that is most determined by your will in the moment and could have been otherwise. That's not what they see as most human in us, as what mostly binds things, makes things ours. What they think is most human in us is the things that tell us about what we are. Now, in order to be something, you have to have a stable character. Someone who's like, when we say one day a malach, one day a galach, is not anything. So really, that person is not human at all, because he doesn't have any, what we call internal, like he doesn't have anything that we could say, this is him. But the person that has the stably good character, or vice versa, his bad characters, that is the person who his actions followed mostly from what he is. And that is something very different from something, for example, that the existentialists, some of them, in extreme cases, are after. And also very different from what many people are after nowadays when they say, I things need to be by a choice. This is, for example, right, the Nafkimina, the very clear place where this awakened difference is in the value of things done because you have a good education. Someone who had a good education, which means that he was taught to like certain things. Like good education, of course, education works mostly by external, like it works by promising reward and punishment, works by getting you to do things. We can't really get you to like something. You have to somehow see that for yourself. You do learn that from someone, but it's not like, it's very hard to like give that to someone automatically, easily. But it's still because of that education that you become a good person. And according, many people nowadays seem to think that is less about me. So this, I'm doing this because I was taught to do it. I'm doing this, this is not me because it's not my choice, right? And when they say it's not my choice, what they don't mean choice in the Aristotelian sense. They don't mean that I don't have a considered opinion, a considered drive towards this, that I think this is the correct way to act, and I like it also, and therefore I choose to act it. That's not what they mean, because that's actually what their education gave you. If it's a good education, it's not only an external education, right? Education starts with lishma, but it somehow gets you lishma somehow, by some magic. It's a different discussion, right? We discussed this many times, if you went through certain systems, you get certain virtues. It's a very bad, I don't think it ever happens really. It would be a very weird education where they would like, you would stay at the level of reward and punishment. Like the moment the Mashgiach leaves the room, you're left with nothing. That's not really how life works. You are always left with something. Slightly less than what you did for the reward and punishment, but you were left with something about yourself, right? Now people would, now of course, everyone agrees that when you're only acting for the for fear of punishment or for hope of reward, that you're not acting out of yourself. But I'm talking about the next step, right? Once I went to yeshiva and they got me to learn, I don't know, an hour a week, whatever, how long, right? When you're afraid, you learn 2 hours a day. But then when you're not afraid, you learn an hour a week. That's the amount of the middle day they got you they got into you, right? I'm showing you something very simple. And now, people might think, I don't think anyone really thinks this, I think people don't think it through, but people sometimes would make the claim that, okay, the fact that you like to learn, that's just my conditioning, that's just my education, that's not me. What are the things that are you? When you jump into the pool in the middle of the night for no reason, when you're drunk, that's you. What is this you? What is this free choice that people are after all the time? The same like the Katz Chassidim who are looking. I mean, I'm pretty sure that they're not really confused, that we can interpret it in the correct way, but sometimes the people understand it this way. Like the person that we discussed many over here last time also, the Katz Chassidim said that if you daven because you davened yesterday, that's not a good reason. And nobody really does that, right? We discussed that. But what I'm getting at is like, if we interpret that as you daven because you daven, in other words, because my education made me a person that davens once a week, once a day, whatever it is, that is not less me. It would be very weird. Like, we have to think, what would be the other option? Like, what is more me? It seems, and this is true, if you take this to the extreme, or you make it very clear, you'll see that there's this different version of what choice is, very different version of what will is, and there's a history, it has a history, and it has a reason why it came to be. And that is something like things that are done for no reason. Not because that's what I am, because that's a reason. Because what I am just means that the fullness of what I am sees this as a good thing and likes that. There's reasons in that. It's not like, you might not be able to articulate them, but that's a different problem. But there are reasons. And people seem to think that free will, and this is, people think that that's what makes a human being human, mostly. Something, some kind of free will, like we said, free-floating will. Something like, I can choose to be anything I want. And then if you're the person that you were taught to be, then you're not authentic. Remember the word authentic? Now, authenticity is actually a fake thing in this sense, because authentic to what? What does it mean to be authentic? Remember authentic? There's fake people that are doing what their education told them, and there's real people who are doing what their education, opposite. Okay? And they're real to what? Like, authentic is like, right? Authentic watch is one that was really made by that watchmaker, not the guy in Chinatown that made it. Okay? And what is an authentic person? How is it really the person? There needs to be some real person.
You.
Yeah, but who's this you? There needs to be an ideal you.
What you like.
Where is this like? What does that mean?
What you like to do.
Where did you get the like? The guy that's following his education also really likes the things. Again, unless you're talking about the really early stages of education where people are really just acting out of fear and hope for rewards and punishment. Or maybe there's some people that are, I really wonder about this. Like, the Muslim Sfarim have this like habit of attacking everyone for living in here. So is that true? Do you really think that I think not. I'm more positive about this. I have a friend that told me that he thinks that if you would convince the entire Lakewood that there's no Gehenim, they would all stop coming to show.
Yeah.
I don't think that's true.
Sure.
I think they'll come less to show. Mm-hmm. But they should come less anyway. Like, they're coming too much. That would be a good thing. But I don't think they will stop.
If there's no Gehenim.
He told me, take the biggest tzaddik that you know, the Amshon HaRebbe, you convince him there's no Gehenna, he becomes a goy the next day. That's what my friend told me.
I think there'll be a lot more people than you think. True? I think so.
So I think there'll be more than you think. But I'm taking the other bet. Let's try. I've actually seen it tried, and I've seen it played out. It's true that people stop doing certain things, but there's at some point, there's
I know a perfect person to ask, and I'm going to ask him.
Who?
Whatever.
He doesn't believe that already there's no Gehenim?
No. That if he would... Whatever, it's fine.
My bet is, I agree that there will be like a shock because there's other reasons, like for people, beliefs are very important to their personality and so on.
Yeah,
but,
right.
Okay, but that's a side problem. We're not... That's a psychological...
That's
therapy.
The answer to the question.
No, but we're trying to get at something else. We're trying to get at... Is it true that, like, the Muslims from have this really funny, Muslim and Hasidah sometimes have this, like, really funny blame of everyone that's not them, and say that you're all acting for external reasons. You don't, none of you like what you're doing, right? You're all fakers, right? That's basic. Not fakers. You're all not authentic, right? You're all not. Now, I think my bet is because of this Aristotelian understanding of education. I think that most, like I said, most people, that I've seen this play out, actually, in people personally. I have seen it playing out. It's true that they daven less. But they don't stop to daven, and that's fine. I think that most people, it would take away their reward and punishment, and they will mostly do the same thing that they've been doing before.
Why do you think that is?
Because the reward and punishment trained them to be that kind of people. Because of that. Because if you don't have that education, that's a different discussion.
Authentic?
Yeah. Because now they don't realize that they're authentic because they keep on adding this Gehenim every day again. But if you take it away, it won't change much. Or it would actually make things better. And they like life much better.
It's so hard to wrap my head around.
You see what I'm saying? Because let's say, take my example of learning. That's a good example. You go to yeshiva, they tell you have to learn for 10 hours a day. And some people manage to do it by extreme reward and punishment and like living in this like cult situation.
Yeah.
And so on. Okay. Then you leave the yeshiva. And now, of course, for the 2 weeks of Ben Zman, you don't learn for 1 second because you got to get out all the steam from the system. Okay. But then, after a few months pass, you won't be the same person that you were before. You will be the kind of person that needs to learn at least data number, like at least an hour a week. And how do I know? Because they're coming to my Shiddish people. Like they're going to Dafyam, like the YouTube Dafyam Shiddish are full of those people. They wouldn't have done it otherwise. There's many people that don't learn even an hour a year because they didn't have that reward and punishment ever applied to them. Mm-hmm. And the same thing for all the other mitzvahs. Now, would they do, details can be discussed, but I do think that, therefore, I think that the Musar like argument that says everyone is just Yerusha Einish is a little weird. Yerusha Einish in the sense that you don't really like, you don't really believe it, you don't really care for things that you're doing it for external reasons, right, for size reasons.
I don't know.
You don't agree with me. Let's try it. We're going to put a pill in Lakewood that takes away everyone's belief in Gehenna. Let's see what happens. people spend a lot of time telling themselves that this is what will happen. Maybe that's what itself she got.
Well, if what you're saying is true, maybe it's because they never believed it in the first place.
No, because the belief that
maybe they never believed that there's a Gehenna in the first place.
No, what I'm saying is
so you're not really taking anything away.
Well, the person who said you should do Altir Kavadam Shana Shana Sarab, it's not because he didn't believe in Gehenna, right? It's because that is still a reward and punishment. It's, okay, forget about deeper meanings of all the Gehenna and stuff. It's because they're being a good person is its own reward, right?
Mm.
And of course, we cannot train you in that because you cannot see that before you start doing it.
You know what? Let's say take the other way around. Let's say there's no such thing as Gan Eden. How many people will go to Shul?
Same thing. I
think it's different.
No, why? When I say Gan Eden, just scare your side. It's the same.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's say it like this. First, let's say the truth. The truth is that even if there's no Gan Eden, it makes you a better. It's better to go to Shul. Okay, I don't know if you have
like
to go to Shul.
Fear is structure. Like,
okay.
Like people have a hard time doing things without structure. Let's say like, if I don't have a job to go to, I'm not going to get up in the morning. You know.
Okay,
so that's what the study was saying. The perfect society is the one that's constantly in fear.
No, but that's I don't think that's what the study was saying.
I think too much fear has diminishing returns, though. You know,
right? But that's not a problem. See, that's a different thing. You might say that is that structure a good thing by itself? Is the structure consist of, like, maybe the question here is, does the structure consist of these beliefs? I don't think it consists of these beliefs. I think that those beliefs, reward, punishment, things like that. I don't think it consists of that. Even if you talk about like a hydro society, forget about the religious things, right? The trustworthiness of the people doesn't consist of them knowing that the government will put them in jail for 30 years if they lie. That's what trains them to be that kind of people. That's what we're calling internality here, right? It's true that if the government would not have put anyone in jail, nobody would have been gotten that training. Therefore, it's true that the side would become worse. Because rewards and punishments are trainings, they're chinuch. But it's not true that it consists of that. You know what I'm saying? In the same sense, you say, it's a good structure to have, like, you have to have a share every day, you have to go to shul, that's a structure, and you only have that structure because of the beliefs that you're going to go to hell if you don't, okay. But it's those beliefs create something besides themselves.
Should be saying forced habits create good habits.
Yeah. That's the basic theory of habituation here. Yeah. I don't know, where did I get to all of this?
It could be authentic, though, no?
What is authentic? Very good. That's,
like, if I have a job
I feel this is authentic.
And so that's like, you know, it's something I want to do, but it's hard to do without a structure. You know what I'm saying?
It's,
like,
it's hard to do well because you don't really believe in your job. And maybe you shouldn't because there's nothing to believe. It's only a way to make money. That's really the question. I mean, there's some things that you shouldn't believe in. Like, why would someone believe in their job? That's a weird
thing. No, but let's say without the job, I think it's a good thing to get up early. But it's just like, if there's no one forcing me, like laziness is going to get the better.
I'm somewhat skeptical of if it's a good thing to wake up early. You know, like, why is it good? What's so good about it? It's good because you got to get to your job. And other things like
that. You have a clearer head when you get
up. Oh, okay, that's a good
maybe.
Reason.
I don't know.
No, I get it. I'm not disagreeing. I'm saying sometimes we say these kind of things. Like, I believe it's good to wake up early, but if you think about why it's good, like, what's wrong with waking up at 1 p.m.? Oh, because you're gonna miss. Okay, very good. Why then they schedule everything at 1 anyways? Oh, because you got to coordinate with other people. Whatever. Sometimes these things are not really good. But let's get back to what we're saying. So that's like authenticity has to be authentic to something. So to what is authentic, right? If there's an idea of what is a real, like, in my version that I was describing here, it doesn't really make sense to talk about authenticity. Only to the extent that, again, like the self-controlled person or the person that's forcing himself or that's training himself, it doesn't have any self, like it doesn't, or his self doesn't match with his internal, those active. That's in some sense inauthentic.
Sometimes you're being forced to do things that you don't think have any benefit to you, and sometimes you are being forced to do things that, you know, that
okay.
you think are of benefit to you.
That's fine. benefit also can be like external benefit, where like I need money, therefore I gotta go to my job, but I don't really care about that thing I'm doing. I care about its result. So that it's like a side, the really the job, the work is a side thing to the thing that I care about, and it can be something that I do care about, like waking up. If you really care about being the kind of person that wakes up in a certain time and so on, right? So that this is what we have to understand, that this is some versions, like I think that some modern versions, some like existential versions of this like thing called authenticity. Of course, the existentialists have noticed that authenticity doesn't really make sense, because by their version of it, and people like want to be what they are, like what they chose, and sometimes it's just defined by not what you told me. That's very babyish, like a teenager. Like, I'm going to do everything my parents told me not, because that feels like I'm doing it. Okay, I get it. That's like that feeling I get, but it's not real, because who is this you? In any case, that you is like is going to be the product of your education, or if you're educating yourself. Okay, so still, I think the version that says that what you choose pure, most purely, most freely is most you, is a version that really, in some sense, doesn't believe or thinks that the most primary part of a person is some kind of like free ability to choose within options, choose between options. And they don't really think that there's such a thing as a personality. Well, at least that there might be such a thing as a personality, but what makes a human is mostly not his personality, not what kind of person he is, because that's just your nature. That's like, we ascribe that to education, we ascribe that to culture, we ascribe that to conditioning, things like that. So what makes a human, and like makes an act morally worth talking about, right, or humanly worth talking about, is some very weird thing. Something that, like I said, no, I don't think anyone ever experienced that thing, because it does not really how life works for the most part. But some kind of like free choosing of a life, or free choosing of a meaning between, from possibilities, or even from possibilities, maybe it's too limited, so from infinity. I think intuitively a lot of us think this way, because we're too intuitively taught to think about like choice as choosing between possibilities. And then we say like, well, I was given education to be a certain kind of person. I was made into a certain kind of person by education. Mm-hmm. And therefore, I don't really have options. I don't have optionality. I can't be a different kind of person. I could be a little here, a little there, and then I could like say, oh, so that's the little word. Like, you know, I had a friend that makes Chassidish hats. And he told me, he had a store, Chassidish hat store. He told me that in his store, there's 375 different kinds of hats. And I was like, you know, your store has only one kind of hat. And he explained, you know, you have to understand that everyone wants to be very individual. But since you're only allowed to wear one kind of hat, if you're a Chassidish Yid, so there's 370 variations, because there's like, it's combinatrix, right? There's like a little wider, a little thinner, a little taller this piece, a little bit bigger the ribbon, a little more high the everything, and there's like, turns out that everyone knows exactly which of those 375 combinations they want. Because that's what makes them special and different from other people. So that's like a very weird, a very weird consolation for the kind of person that says, like, and that's really all of life is that, like, just a very clear muscle for how the world is. Like, in the end of the day, we're all just choosing one of those 375 constellations of the ribbon size plus the brim size plus the height of the hat. Like, that's what choice is. Maybe you think that choice is something that you yourself made up, right? Something that I was mechadish. I originated. I'm original. I'm original guy. I'm not a copy. I'm an original guy. Oh, you mean to say that you put that hat, I know. And that guy that has the hats, the member has to go to China to the factory and tell them to make like, and they realize that you need a microscope to know the difference. Like, it's normal person looks at it, yeah, it's the same hat. I don't know. No, if you live in that community, you notice all these like tiny differences. Okay, but it's fake. There's nothing so original about anyone. There's so many ways to be a human being. There's many original ways. The reason people think that this kind of originality is important is because they identify what's most human about a human is some like very tiny little thing, very like, which is supposed to be very free, which is like the choice of what you are. Choose what you want to be. So, no, that's one. Some people end up with that. But if you think like me, that being a human means all of this, then being authentic would just mean being authentic, not being forced, not acting only out of compulsion or out of fear, things like that. But it's not really correct to say that what you're educated into, for example, is not you. That is who you are. There isn't another you. There isn't like this chooser that it's abstract chooser that's besides for all of that. And therefore, for example, if I say that someone acts because of the kind of person he is, because of the kind of habits he is, whether he got it from education, whether he got it by educating himself, and I say that that's the person who lives out from choice, I'm not saying that there's, after having the middle, you still have choice. You don't still have choice. The choice consists of being that kind of person, and choice just means the recognition that this is good. We have to get more clear about this, like, recognition, like, why we call this choice. Like, it is a preference, we call it a preference or a choice. There's something like where I think this is the correct way versus other ways. There's some choosing of that over others, otherwise it's not a choice. But it's not choosing to do this and like and by this very abstract kind of choice. And this is why all of those things are not... all of those like ideas of like doing what the opposite of what my parents taught me don't make that more choice. And this is also why, going back on what I said in the beginning, this is also why wanting to do something is not what we're talking about. This internality is not something about like what I wish, what is in my head that I am. It's what you really are, it's what you really like. Okay, and we have to continue to this, but that's enough.